Pastor Dave, come on up. I guess not Pat, well, my pastor, I guess, sort of, in some way. Pastor Dave, missionary, he and Eileen, missionaries in Belgium, and Dave's going to be speaking to you this morning, and I'm just looking around for like a, there we go.
We're good.
I'm just glad to have you here this morning. Folks, would you welcome him back?
Am I ever glad I've got a friend in Tim Hijack, because you guys are suckers for punishment. That's like, you know, once in December, once in January. Thank you so much, Tim, for having us. We're thrilled to be here. And I am so excited about your small groups. Amazing. 20 small groups in September, 20 that have like are still going on. And do you have more that are, you're hoping to put on? Five more coming up. I think that is unbelievable. You know what, guys? Some of the best moments of my spiritual life have happened in small group. For me, I am a convert. I was originally one of those people that was very suspicious about small groups, but I discovered what life happens in those groups, or at least can happen. So I wanted to talk to you today about what about us? What about us? What about us, guys? It was in a subway in New York City, there was an ad with a dignified older gentleman recommending a particular product, and someone, probably a little kid, thought it would be really funny. So he drew a balloon coming out of the guy's mouth, and then he wrote in the balloon the dirtiest thing that he could think of. He wrote, "I like," and he meant to write, "I like girls," only he made a mistake, and instead of writing girls, he wrote grills. "I like grills." And someone had come along with a felt-tipped pencil and had written under that, "You mean girls, stupid. Duh, grills." Then someone else came along and in another handwriting had written under that, "Yeah, but what about us grills?" What about us grills? It's a good question. What about the people that nobody seems to like, nobody seems to think of? What about those people who feel they've been crowded out of the midst of life? They've been shoved aside, pushed somewhere they don't want to be. What about grills? I suppose most of us feel like that from time to time. We wonder if we fit in. We feel like we don't really belong. Sometimes we don't like ourselves so much, so why would anybody else like us? And many of us have at least moments of ennui or severe bouts of loneliness. There are people sitting here today who never, ever escape that place of loneliness. So it's a fair question. Yeah, what about us grills? And I'm here to tell you today that our God is the God of the lonely. Our God is the God who cares about the lonely. In the Bible, there was a man who would become the king of Israel who knew a ton of loneliness. His name was David, and often he found himself alone. Sometimes he found himself alone because he had to work as a shepherd out in the fields. Other times he found himself alone because he had been shut out. And now he's left wondering about his future. And in those moments when we wonder if anybody cares or anybody knows, in those seasons where we feel desolate and abandoned and left to our own pain, you need to know that God is the God of the lonely. Listen to what David says about God. "A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing, but the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land." You gotta love this. God sets the lonely in families. Now, let me tell you something. I am an only child. I mean, God made one of me, and then he threw away the mold. And my poor mother, You see, I'm an only child, and my dad died when I was 8 years old. And so I was raised by a widow woman. And in the 1960s, to be a kid that had only one parent, you were just weird. You didn't fit in. I mean, everybody had mom and dad, and then there was you, the kid with just a mother. And I was the kind of kid that made my mother's hair turn prematurely white. I was left alone. I felt kind of lonely. And so when I got a little bit older, I was looking for just the right kind of woman. And God brought into my life this girl named Eileen. I fell in love. She was drop-dead gorgeous. And not only that, she was the seventh of seven children. Came from a big family. So although I didn't have any brothers and sisters, I knew I'd get brothers and sister-in-laws. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Whoopee. But then Eileen and I had talked about this before we got married, and we had five kids. God sets the lonely in families. Isn't that wonderful? Sometimes not so much, let me tell you. Sometimes I'm saying, God, let me out of here. But the truth is that God takes people who are lonely, and he puts them in places where they're surrounded by love. It's his way. And yet, let me be honest, I still have moments of loneliness. And sometimes I still struggle through bouts of loneliness. So what do you do about that? What do you do when you're feeling crowded out? Let's take a moment and visit the story of a guy in the Gospel of Luke named Zacchaeus. You remember Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Anybody remember that? He's a wee little man. And here's a guy who must have felt a little of the ostracism of loneliness. You see, Zacchaeus was a grill. What do you do? And I want you to look now at the causes of loneliness. According to a 2006 study, our circle of close friends is getting smaller and smaller. Over the last 20 years, the number of people that we can discuss matters important to us with has dropped nearly a third, from a mean of 2.94 to 2.08. The number of people who said they had no one to talk to about important matters more than doubled. Listen to this. 25% of people said, I don't have anybody I can talk to. Look around you. Would you just look around at some of the folks sitting next to you? Because one out of four of these people has no one to talk to. 2012 New York Times article added that this scarcity of close friends has especially impacted midlifers. Anybody here in midlife? I'm just looking around. Some of you look like you're a little past that. But, you know, during midlife, it's harder to meet the three conditions required for making new friends. Proximity, repeated connections, and a setting that encourages people to talk to each other. And so that's why in churches like WPA, we're trying to push the idea of small groups. Because in small groups, you can develop healthy relationships that will be there when you need them. So let's look at Luke chapter 19. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. Now, my guess is that Zacchaeus may have been wealthy, but he knew loneliness. He's not just physically crowded out because he's short. He's emotionally crowded out too. Why? Well, maybe it was just because he was short that he couldn't get through the crowd, but maybe it's because he was successful. You know, I've had the opportunity to talk with some fairly successful people over the period of my ministry. And some of the wealthiest people that I've talked to have told me that it's hard for them to have real friends because they're never sure who's a friend out of care and love and who's out of friend because they want something. That's a tough thing. And so maybe Zacchaeus felt a little bit of that crowdedness. Maybe Zacchaeus was lonely. Maybe he was crowded out because the crowd just wasn't interested in him and his needs. They were interested in seeing Jesus for themselves. They were just insensitive to the stubby little tax collector. But when we're feeling crowded out, there's always a reason. And getting back to Psalm 68, here's a few reasons why we may feel left out. First of all, we go through periods of relational deficit. Did you know that the Canadian Children's Rights Council says fatherlessness is one of the greatest social problems in Canada? You know what? There's too many kids that are being born into a world where they have absentee fathers. Well, the Bible says that God becomes a father to the fatherless. Do you know that children who grow up fatherless are 8 times more likely to go to prison? 5 times more likely to commit suicide? 20 times more likely to have behavioral problems? 20 times more likely to become rapists? 32 times more likely to become runaways? 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances? I hate to say that was me. 9 times more likely to drop out of high school? And 1/10 as likely to get A's in high school. You know what? Relational deficit leaves severe scars in our lives. Or maybe it's circumstantial crisis. How many of you know stuff happens in life? Stuff happens. Death, sickness. The Bible says that God is a defender of widows. People are widowed, they're left alone. And as we age and come into the twilight years, it's unclear whether anybody cares about us. You know something? My own mother lived in Trois-Rivières, Quebec for many, many years. She lived in her own apartment, and no one would come to visit her. We would come down to Quebec once a year during the summer, and that was the big visit that she had. And I'd beg her to move to Sudbury, where we were pastoring, and she wouldn't do it. And then we moved to Cambridge, and I begged her to move to Cambridge. And finally she did. And you know what? The last 8 years of her life were among the best. She was surrounded by grandchildren who doted on her, a daughter-in-law who loved her, and a son who was, well, eh. Circumstantial crisis, relational deficit, or emotional captivity. You know, the habits and hang-ups and hurts. Maybe you've been through some form of abuse. You've developed some sort of soul-destroying habit. You've experienced some kind of serious emotional abandonment. But the Bible says that our God leads out the prisoners with singing. He takes us from emotional captivity. Well, Zacchaeus was a grill. On the surface of the story, it just looks like he was physically crowded out because he was such a short guy. But Luke gives us a strong psychological clue that he was a despised tax collector. He had sold his soul to the Romans. He was a Jew who had sold his soul to the Romans to get this position of being a chief tax collector. And now he was gouging his fellow citizens to make money for himself. He was despised and hated, and people couldn't stand the presence of him. That leads to a more profound issue. He's been shunned and left out and set aside, and that's why he's on his own. And that's why there's no place for him. But guess what? Jesus, listen to me. Lean in. Can you lean in? Just lean in a bit. I just want to see you leaning in. Good, good. Jesus loves guys like Zacchaeus. Jesus is crazy about grills. Jesus is passionate about people who've been left out. So what do you do when you're crowded out? Well, number one, you dig up the cause. You dig up the cause. Is it circumstantial crisis? Is it relational deficit? Is it emotional captivity? Why is it I'm feeling so left out? But then, secondly, what do? You step out. Step out of the crowd. Step out of the crowd, and like Zacchaeus, I'm going to suggest that you find your solutions on the tree. You gotta step out of the crowd. It's a big deal, isn't it, when we dare to be out there? It's a big deal, especially when we're filled with our own insecurities. But that's exactly what Zacchaeus did. He got right out there and he put it all on the line. Now, if you missed that sentence, that was the key sentence of the whole message. I'm going to say it again so you can write it down or inscribe it in your heart. It's the most important part of the whole sermon, so don't miss it. Zacchaeus was willing to get right out there and put it all on the line. Guys, you gotta be willing to get out of the comfort zone. You gotta be willing to get out of your little hut, your little huddle, your little place of comfort, and stretch a little bit to become, well, a little bit more available to others. You gotta be willing to do it. So, it says in Luke 19 that Zacchaeus ran ahead, climbed a sycamore fig tree to see Jesus since he was coming that way. And when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." And so he came down at once and he welcomed him gladly. Now, guys, listen. Grills don't normally do this kind of thing. Grills don't normally act like that. They don't normally like to put their grillness out there for everybody to see. Some girls just try to pretend it's not a problem. They play denial. Remember what your mother told you when the bully was picking on you? And she said, "You just ignore them and they'll go away." Do you know how stupid that is? Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will... That is dumb advice. You know what? It hurts to be a grill. And you can't just ignore it. Just pretend it's not bothering you. Pretending the bully isn't there will not make the bully go away. But that's sometimes what a lot of grills do. They just don't take an honest look at themselves. They pretend it isn't that way. And some grills, they just run away. You know what? Debbie Williams didn't invite me to her party. When I was in grade 6, that was like the end of the universe for me. Like, Debbie Williams didn't invite me to her party. I don't care if she invites me. I didn't want to go to that party. She could beg me and I wouldn't go. That's what grills do. And Zacchaeus is a grill, but Zacchaeus doesn't do that. He does the unexpected. He takes it head on. He climbs up that tree where everybody can see him. What's going on in that tree? What's taking place? I'll tell you what. Solutions. Solutions are taking place in that tree. It's a moment. It's a big moment for Zacchaeus. Other people hide their stuff, but not Zacchaeus. He gets up in that tree where everybody can see him. How many of you know, on the tree, there's vulnerability? Hello? Is anybody out there? Will you say that word with me? Vulnerability. You are there. Thank you. He says, "Look at me. Everybody, look. I'm grillish, and I know it. And here I am up in this tree. This shows how much I want to be a part. I'm opening all the doors. I'm opening all my windows. Come on, Jesus, can you see me? It can't be denied. Yoo-hoo, Jesus, I'm up here. I'm a grill. Hey, 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 everybody." I think it's magnificent. I think it's courageous and beautiful and magnificent. He's saying, "I'm a grill, and I need somebody to care about me. I need somebody to let me into the stream of things. How about you, Jesus? Will you let me in? How about you, people of Jericho? Is there room for me?" Now, I can hear you say, "You know what? You don't have to make a scene. You don't have to do that kind of thing." Because surely Jesus knew about Zacchaeus. He's a pretty prominent man. And yes, I suppose that Jesus did know all about Zacchaeus before he got there. I mean, he calls him by name. But that doesn't change the circumstance. Sometimes it's necessary for us to climb the tree. Sometimes you got to put it out there. Sometimes you got to come clean. You got to stop playing cool. You got to let people know that you have needs. And you got to be willing to go out of your way to do it. Up on that tree, let me tell you something, there's vulnerability. And of course, on that tree, you can see. You can see Jesus. How many of you know sometimes in life, Jesus is obscured? Have you noticed that? Sometimes life gets in the way of Jesus. Sometimes busyness gets in the way. Sometimes it's the crowd. It's the stuff you're doing. It's the people you're doing it with. How many of you understand that sometimes Jesus gets obscured? He gets obscured sometimes by your TV screen. And some of you, he gets obscured by your computer screen. Oh, and that computer screen can lead you down a long, long cavernous hole. Sometimes Jesus is obscured in our lives. And sometimes we just figure out how to fit in with everybody else, and so we don't see Jesus. Even when he's walking by this moment. Happens in church. What time is it? When's brunch? Is this guy going to stop yammering? Sometimes it happens in the middle of worship. Oh, I'm so sick and tired of these songs. And Jesus is walking right by. Sometimes it happens at home. Sometimes it happens at work. But if you're Zacchaeus, you're desperate. You're out on the limb with all your stuff hanging out. And you get a clear view of Jesus. You can see him coming down the road. You've been intentional about it. So on the tree, you can be vulnerable. On the tree, you can see. But more, on the tree, you can be seen. Ooh. You guys know good news, bad news stories? Do you know how they go? You know, here's the bad news, a guy falls out of an airplane. Here's the good news, though, he had a parachute. Here's the bad news, the parachute doesn't work. But here's the good news, there's a haystack right down below. Here's the bad news, though, there's a pitchfork sticking out of the haystack. Here's the good news, though, he missed the pitchfork. Here's the bad news, he missed the haystack. Life is like that, isn't it? It's good news, it's bad news. And this tree is kind of like a bad news, good news joke. The good news is on the tree, you can see Jesus. Isn't that wonderful? But here's the bad news. On the tree, you will be seen by others. Let me tell you something, folks. Here's the deal. There is no such thing as secret Christianity. There is no such thing as being a Christian without admitting that you're a grill. In fact, the only people that are allowed into the fellowship of the church are people who know their grills and who declare that they're grills. I mean, you may come to church, you may sit in a pew, you may occupy the space and even breathe out the songs, but that doesn't make you the real deal. The real deal are people who've admitted, they've declared spiritual bankruptcy. They have said, I need Jesus. Yeah, it's a pretty grillish thing to do. But the truth is, you're going to be seen. And that's scary. But Jesus can see you too, and that's where the hope is. So step out of the crowd of humanity. Step out and let people see. Because that's where you'll see Jesus. So figure out why, step out of the crowd, and then finally, act on the openness extended to you. What exactly happens when we're open? Exactly what happened to Zacchaeus? Jesus saw Zacchaeus in the tree, and he says, Zacchaeus, come down and make haste and come down. And you know what? Zacchaeus made haste, and he showed up. And look at what it says in the next verse. It says, he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And all the people saw this, and they began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. The verse says that he welcomed him gladly. He ran right up to Jesus, and Jesus says, I want the key to your heart. And Zacchaeus says, here it is. Is there anything else you'd like? And right away, the crowd is upset. They began to mutter. They kind of liked what they'd heard about Jesus. He's a miracle worker. He's an incredible teacher. He knows how to shame those Pharisees and those religious hypocrites. He teaches with an authority that no one else has. They kind of liked Jesus. But now, Jesus has identified himself with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, I got to come to your house. We're going to hang together, Zacchaeus. And now that Jesus has identified himself with Zacchaeus, some of Zacchaeus's grillness rubs off on Jesus. And the people start having different ideas about Jesus. Can you just picture that Pharisee in the corner? Is it possible that Jesus is one of those grills too? He's going to the house of a sinner? A publican sinner? A tax collector sinner? And so now all of a sudden, the crowd has turned against Jesus. Because Jesus would rather be with the grills than be with the crowd. Those two outcasts, being open with each other, walked off together. Just the two of them. See, that's what happens when one person is open to another. The other person becomes open too. And so Zacchaeus stood up and he said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay four times the amount. Wow. Can you say wow? Say that backwards. That is incredible. Guys, listen. Grace received always transforms. Maybe that's how you know that grace has been truly received. It always creates a revolution in the soul. It always creates an internal transformation. And Zacchaeus is a man changed. Stop and think about this for a moment. If he's been robbing people to become wealthy, he said, I'm going to give half my money away, and with the other half, I will pay back four times whatever I've taken any from anybody. I don't know. Did you ever do the arithmetic on that? Like, it don't make any sense. Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house. Because this man, too, is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the grills. Well, it says what was lost. You see, folks, grace begets grace. Grace begets grace. It's transformative. It always changes the recipient. And folks, what we need, what Canada needs, what WPA needs, what this church needs, is it needs that ongoing transformation of grace. So that this can be a safe place to stand up on a tree and say, hey, I'm a grill. Is there a place for me here? Is there a place for a grill at WPA? Somebody say yes. Many of you will never have heard of Yvette Vickers. Yvette Vickers was a pinup model of the 50s and the 60s. She was a B-movie star of horror pictures, and she's best known for her star-making turn in that famous movie, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Maybe you remember it. It's pretty pathetic Hollywood, let me tell you. According to the Los Angeles coroner's report, Yvette Vickers would have been 83 in August of 2011. But nobody knows exactly how old she was when she died. She was found in her house, having been dead there for the better part of a year, before a neighbor and fellow actress, a woman named Susan Savage, noticed cobwebs and yellowing letters in her mailbox. So she reached through a broken window to unlock the door and pushed her way through the piles of junk mail and mounds of clothing barricading the house. And upstairs, she found Vickers' body mummified near a heater that was still running. Her computer was on too, its glow giving an eerie light to the empty space. The Los Angeles Times posted a story about Vickers' death that quickly went viral. Within 2 weeks, Vickers' lonesome death had already been the subject of 16,057 Facebook posts and 881 tweets. She had long been a horror movie icon. She was one of these people who went to these conventions for such things. But now she was an icon of a new and different kind of horror, our growing fear of loneliness. And certainly she received way more attention in death than she did in the final years of her life, with no children, no apparent family, no religious group, no immediate social circle of any kind. She had begun as an elderly woman to look elsewhere for companionship. And Savage, who found her, later told the Los Angeles Magazine that she had searched Vickers' phone bills for clues about the life that had led to such an ugly end. And in the months before her grotesque death, Vickers had made calls not to friends or family, but to distant fans who had found her through the fan conventions and internet sites. Vickers' web of connections had grown broader, but shallower. As has happened for many of us. You see, folks, we're living in a day of amazing isolation that would have been unimaginable to our ancestors. And yet, we have never been more accessible than we are today. You want to get in touch with me? You can get in touch with me by Twitter. You can get in touch with me by Facebook. You can get in touch with me by email. We got this cell phone. We got that cell phone. We got a phone here. We got a phone there. There's 1,001 ways that we can be gotten in touch with. You can be linked in. And yet we live in this accelerating contradiction. The more connected we become, the lonelier we are. How many of you know that Facebook meme? It shows up almost every time I look on my wife's Facebook, because I don't have my own. Every time I look on my wife's Facebook, I see somebody has put one of these up. It says something like this: I'm going to put this out there to see how many people care about me. Or here's the other side of that coin. I've just cleaned out my Facebook account, and it looks like you made the cut. How many people are so desperately lonely that Facebook is what validates them? But it doesn't have to be that way. It's not supposed to be that way. If we'll step out of our loneliness, if we'll step out of the crowd, and if we'll get on that tree where we may be seen, and even better, where we can see Jesus and he can see us, if we'll receive the grace that's extended to us, and we'll learn the secret of extending grace to others. Listen, I don't know of a better vehicle in the life of a church than small groups for all of that to possibly happen. Listen, getting into a small group doesn't guarantee it will. But I'll tell you something, if you go to a small group and you all have that attitude, what a generative, life-giving group that will be. And then our group and our church of groups and our community will become a safe place for grills. Because like, just between you and me, real personal right now, I know I'm a grill. Are you?